Well, I don't know what happened, but finally we have, we can talk. Good morning, Dr.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for riding the ship here.
Oh, well, we got it going. Hey, you're here, you know, we got bugs this morning. You're here to take care of the bugs, so what can I say? We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for getting us on there.
I've got a guest.
Really special guest today. The topic for today's show, ladies and gentlemen, is cancer. We're going to have an open and honest discussion about cancer.
My wife is a cancer survivor.
Thank God. Well, yes, praise God.
Yes, sir.
Unfortunately, there's too few of those cancer survivors, especially once you're past stage one or stage two. The statistics are pretty abysmal. Since the war on cancer started 30-plus years ago, our survival rates really haven't budged. So that's why we're going to have this open and honest discussion today. Now, I want to start out from the outset saying that the Texas Medical Board, who issues my license, is clear in that there are three treatments for cancer recognized by the state of Texas, which is chemo, radiation, and surgery. Those are the three treatments that an oncologist can recommend in this state. So, that being said, at our clinic, we do not treat cancer. We do see a lot of cancer patients, and we're primarily there as a consultant to consult them on nutritional status and immune therapies to try to improve their immune system. So,
let me give them one phone number right quick.
Okay.
In case we'd have a call. You're on the front line. We were having problems, so you're on the 745-5800 line.
Right.
Folks, if you'd like to call in, you can use 748-8273. Write that down, 748-8273, and we'll take your call on that line.
Okay. So right before we get to our guests, I just want to remind my listeners, I was just a family practice doctor down in Garza County when a patient came to me and handed me a DVD, said I needed to watch it. And the DVD was of Dr. Lorraine Day. She was the former head of the orthopedic trauma surgery department at UC San Francisco. Dr. Day had advanced breast cancer and decided to opt out of those three treatments, chemo, radiation, surgery, or actually I think she had a little surgery, but not the chemo, and decided to go on a quest to find some natural remedies that could boost her immune system and eradicate the cancer on her own. And that's what ended up happening. She was on 60 Minutes to tell her story. She produced multiple DVDs, and I had one in my hands. This was in 2011 when a patient brought me that. It really opened my eyes to her story, obviously, and her testimony that she was able to go into remission using some non-standard of care techniques. Thought it was really interesting, but I was busy in my clinic seeing 40 patients a day, didn't really have anything to do more with that. And then after that is when I got introduced to functional medicine through the remission of my nurse practitioner's celiac disease after he talked to an integrative doctor, Roby Mitchell in Amarillo. And one of the first conferences I went to in 2012 was the Cancer Control Society conference out in California, and that really opened my eyes. That was the first time I attended a conference where there were physicians there who were giving case presentations and testimonies. One in particular, Dr. Nick Gonzalez from New York, gave his testimony, and the patients testified also. I was able to talk to Dr. Gonzalez after his lecture that day and was able to purchase his book, and he autographed it for me, and that really opened my eyes at that point that there were a lot of testimonies out there of late-stage cancer patients, stage 3, stage 4, failed conventional therapies, sent home to die on hospice, and were still alive 20 years later and 30 years later. Another person I met at that conference or was introduced to was Gerson, Charlotte Gerson, the daughter of Max Gerson. Picked up Dr. Max Gerson's book, A Cancer Therapy, and I highly recommend it. It's a great read, a lot of historical stuff there. But on the title page, it talks about the hearings that were before the subcommittee of the Foreign Relations United States Senate, 79th Congress. This was July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, 1946, and Dr. Max Gerson from New York brought 10 patients with him, presented their cases, and then he brought 50 other charts with him that showed cancer in remission after they failed conventional therapy. That was back in 1946. He was describing a remission of cancer, not using the standard 3 therapies. But anyway, so I was introduced to all this, and it kind of blew my mind that there were these patients that were surviving. But then I met Ty Bollinger. Ty Bollinger is not a doctor, but he is a He's a happily married husband and father. He's a devoted Christian. He's a health freedom advocate. He's a health researcher. He's a former competitive bodybuilder, talk radio host, documentary film producer, and best-selling author. And Ty and I met at that conference, and I got a copy of his book called Cancer, Step Outside the Box. Visited with Ty and found out he went to Baylor, where I went to undergrad, graduated with, I believe, CPA degree. But Ty lost several family members to cancer, including his mother and his father. They had undergone the chemo, radiation, and surgery and succumbed to the cancer. So he began his quest to learn more about all the different ways that God's design, God's beautifully designed body, could be supported to prevent and put cancer into remission. So he went on a quest. He was looking at all God's cancer treatments. So looking in the Bible, you know, the herbs, the plants, the seeds, the other medicines that God put in the earth. And what Ty discovered was there wasn't a lot of money in the herb and plant and seed route for treatment. So he felt like that led to some suppression of information relating to cancer treatment. So in 2006 is when he published that book, Cancer Step Outside the Box. It's now in its sixth edition. It's become a bestseller. In 2014, Ty went on to launch The Truth About Cancer. It's a documentary that you can look up online and get the docuseries entitled The Quest for the Cures, viewed by over 2 million people worldwide. In 2015, Ty followed up that Quest for the Cures with a second docuseries called A Global Quest, and where he traveled the world interviewing doctors, scientists, cancer survivors, and it first aired October 2015, and again in 2016, over 10 million people worldwide have watched that. And then just most recently, October of 16, Ty released The Truth About Cancer book. It hit number 2 on New York Times bestseller list the first week it was released. So Ty speaks frequently at seminars, expos, conferences, churches, and he's a regular guest on multiple radio shows. We're happy to have him on today with our show. He's been interviewed numerous times on Fox, so I feel like we have a celebrity here. Ty Bollinger, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Ben, thank you so much for the awesome introduction. I'd like to say Sic'em Bears with a lot of emphasis, but it's hard with our football team doing as poorly as we've done the last few weeks to say Sic'em, but yeah, I am a Baylor Bear. And
now, Ty, wait a minute. Ty, awesome introduction. I'm a Red Raider, and y'all didn't get beat near as bad as we did from a lowly's team, and we play y'all Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock. So.
Oh, it's going to be a... I guess we're going to both be in a little bit of misery the rest of the season. Both of the teams have shown a lot of promise in the last few years, but this year it just ain't happening for either of us.
Yeah. Well, there is good news, though. We'll put the bad news of the football on the back burner.
Yeah.
The good news is there's a lot of hope in cancer therapies. And it's funny. A patient handed me the Texas Monthly last week and marked a page in there for me to read, and it talks about this researcher who's doing some stuff to, quote-unquote, cure cancer. But the thing that I found interesting was it wasn't chemo, radiation, or surgery. It was immunotherapy, and probably most of our listeners have heard about this. These different drugs are producing to try to boost your own immune system. And I just thought, well, wow, after 30 or 40 or 50 years, we're kind of getting the right angle on this finally. Things that boost your native immunity, in particular in this case, it was the T cells, which are your natural cancer killers that God put in our bodies. And that should have been the question all along. Why aren't our natural defenses working? And that's what most of these guys who are in natural cancer therapies or alternative, quote-unquote, cancer therapies do is ask that question. Why isn't your immune system working? Why did it not identify this cancer? What can we do to create an environment where it can do its job? So anyways, interesting Texas Monthly article. I think that was from last month's episode. But Ty, I want to give you an open mic here to kind of just tell your story a little bit about, I mentioned it briefly, much of your family succumbed to cancer, but let you just speak to that and tell the audience how you got into this a little bit.
Yeah, I will. And Ben, it's interesting you mentioned that Texas Monthly article. I didn't read that same article, but there were several articles within the last quarter or so that have made, you know, national headlines, whether it be on CNN or Fox News or whatever. I mean, just big online presence. And they were all on immunotherapy, and they're touting this as some some new direction for cancer treatment. And the irony of it is that that's what people that have been doing research in natural cancer treatments have been saying for 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
Is that we should look at the immune system to and I like what you said, Ben. There's real, you don't cure cancer, you don't treat cancer. And I would venture to say that I don't believe that there really are cures for cancer per se. What I believe is that there are, and we can get into this throughout the show, there are a multitude of substances that God has made that are natural that have effects on the body that allow it to do the curing.
Right.
They act as fuel for the body or repair mechanisms for the body. And it's really the body that is the miracle that does the healing, not the substance.
Amen.
So I like what you said about that. But anyway, it's interesting that these articles are being published. It's like breaking news, you know, immune system helps fight, you know, helps body to fight cancer. It's like, you know, breaking news, water is wet.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we've known that for quite a while. Thank you for the article. But it's, at least the mainstream is beginning to recognize that the immune system does play a big part. But, you know, my education, as you mentioned, Ben, in this was not gained in school while I was at Baylor University. I did study accounting. I have a master's degree in taxation. And for the first 5 years out of school, I was working for big firms like Ernst & Young as an accountant and as a tax professional. And didn't ever really dream that, gosh, I got out of Baylor in 1990, so was it 26 years later? Wow, doesn't seem like I'm that old. But didn't ever realize that 26 years later I'd be doing this. But Dad got sick in 1996, and he died July the 1st is when he was diagnosed. He died July the 25th.
Wow.
And he was 52 years old. I'm almost 49 right now. He was just a few years older than me when he was diagnosed and died within just over a 3 week period of time. And and that really threw me for a loop. I didn't understand how a man that was seemingly healthy, I mean, he didn't really have any symptoms except he had a upset stomach and he had some diarrhea for a few weeks, went into the hospital to take out what they told him was gallstones and wound up being cancerous tumors in his stomach and would be dead in just over 3 weeks. That just blew it. It just blew us all away. Didn't understand what happened.
Mm.
And so Dad died, and we later learned that he died of, they botched the surgery. He didn't really die of cancer. The initial prognosis was that he'd be dead within 2 years if he didn't do chemo and radiation. He actually went in for surgery and died in a little over 3 weeks. And it wasn't their fault. That's the protocol. But, you know, when you cut up a stomach that's full of tumors, it doesn't really heal back very well. You can't stitch it up well. And he bled to death is what happened to Dad.
Mm.
But over the next several years after Dad died, I lost pretty much my whole family, culminating with my mom. I lost both granddads, my grandma, my uncle, cousin, and then finally lost my mother in a period of just 7 years. Lost all my family to cancer or its treatments. And over that period of time, I was researching. I was utilizing skills that I actually did garner at Baylor University while I was going through master's program in taxation. You know, one of the things that they taught us was to research the Internal Revenue Code, and to be able to understand what it means and to write memoranda that other people could understand.
Wow.
That was a skill that I couldn't understand how I was going to be using that in the future. I hated doing it, and it was boring, it was monotonous, it was tedious, but it did teach me how to research, and so now I'm using the same skills, researching medical literature and understanding things that maybe other people don't understand about the history of medicine or about medical studies, and trying to kick it down a notch so that people can understand it. So it definitely is a skill that I was able to use. But as I researched over those years that my family was dying, what I began to realize is that these treatments that we're using for cancer are not very effective, and there's not a lot of people that have long-term success stories. And I also learned that there are other people that one way or another learned about other treatments for cancer that are natural treatments, or maybe even integrative treatments, you know, a little bit of natural, a little bit of conventional medicine, that are living a lot longer. And that was really the impetus that caused me to write my first book, Cancer Step Outside the Box. Was really just getting this information out to the masses that if you are diagnosed with cancer, and according to the World Health Organization, Ben, you know, 1 in 2 men, 1 in 3 women alive today are going to face a diagnosis. So we're talking about a large majority, almost 50% of the audience that's listening, according to the WHO, is going to face cancer. If you are diagnosed, I want people to know that you have options. And I'm not someone that's going to try to shove any kind of a treatment down your throat. I'm completely for medical freedom of choice, freedom to choose what kind of treatment you want to treat your disease. But I think that, to be fair to people, we should at least educate them that they do have options outside of just the big three treatments, that if they are diagnosed, that they might want to consider that. And that's our whole goal, is just to educate people.
Right. Well, I applaud you and thank you for that. I've learned a lot from you, not only your book, Cancer, Step Outside the Box, but even that first docuseries, Quest for the Cures. And I quote it all the time. One, I just thought of Patrick Quillen, I believe, is who said this on your first documentary about salvesterol. You mentioned earlier in the show that God put things into plants and into nature that naturally can kill cancer. And Patrick Quillen talked about salvesterol being deposited into the berry or the vegetable or fruit in the last 24 to 48 hours before it was ripe enough to fall off the vine. And his point was, all of our great-grandparents, you know, 100 years ago, who had their food growing out in their backyard, they were all salvesterol rich. Their bloodstream was full of salvesterol because they were eating their vegetables vine ripened. And he said today, yeah, Everybody's salvesterol deficient because everything's getting picked from 1,500 miles away and 10 days early. And there's no salvesterol in those berries or those vegetables. And that's just one of the phytochemicals out of, you know, 8,000 that we know of, and probably another 20,000 we haven't discovered yet. And that's what I love about your education. You bring in these experts who have done the research, and that's the other thing. The research is out there. I mean, the research on curcumin and lots of other things, and just going through your book, I mean, it's almost overwhelming when you see how much research and how many different agents have been actually studied that show potential benefit is either adjunctive therapy or primary therapy for cancer.
Yeah, you're right, Dr. Ben. It really is amazing, the benefits that we have throughout nature. And I think that was either Patrick Quillen or it might have been Dr. Ben Johnson, one of the two. But I do remember one of the men that I did interview. And Dr. Patrick Quillen, if I remember correctly, in that first one, I walked through his garden.
Yes.
Out in Carlsbad, California. Walked through his garden with him, and he began to describe all these different phytonutrients. But you're right, that's one of many. One of many different natural substances that have anti-cancer effects. And one of my favorite quotes from the first docuseries that we did in 2014 was by Mike Adams, the health ranger. And Mike said it's so interesting to him that as people are going, they're driving their car, they park in the parking lot, and they walk through if they walk through the grass to get to the oncologist's office, then they probably walked by dozens of different substances that had anti-cancer effects on their way to the door, where they're going to be treated with chemo and radiation that are going to destroy their immune system. He said, you know, it's interesting that they're walking by these natural treatments for cancer. He said he was in his training, he was an Indian medicine man, took him out in the forest, and he said, try to find one substance that does not have anti-cancer effects. And he said he couldn't do it. Everything in nature has some sort of effect on the body that allows it to fight cancer. And again, it's not the cures. These are substances that give your body fuel to fight cancer. And we know the mechanisms that they work as well. It's not like it's some voodoo science. We know what happens with certain of these substances that have on the formation of new blood supplies for cancer cells. We know what effect they have on apoptosis, where cancer cells cause cancer cells to self-destruct. We know the effect that they have on the T cells of the immune system. So it's not voodoo science. We know exactly what these substances do, and we know the way that they affect the body, and the body does the healing. You know, what's so bizarre, Dr. Ben, is that as doctors, and you can attest for this, you know, when you were going through medical school, tell the listeners how much education that you had on nutrition going through medical school. I'll be interested to know, because I've never asked you this question.
Well, at UT Houston Medical School, which is where I went, I was there from 1998 to 2002. I had 1 hour of nutrition formal lecture. We did have an elective that we could elect to go to that was on nutrition, and it was about 6 hours of lunchtime lectures. It was totally elective. Probably half the class showed up just because there was free pizza if you came. But so I went to that, and the interesting thing, the doctor who lectured those 6 hours, he was a cardiologist who was reversing coronary artery disease, and he showed the scans to prove it, and he was doing it only with food. And I remember someone in the group asked the question, well, why aren't we learning this in our regular lectures, or why aren't the cardiologists when we do our rounds in the hospital? And he said, well, there's a lot of money in putting a stent in. There's a lot of money in doing a bypass, and there's no money in sitting here telling you to eat, you know, vegetables and clean meats and whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was impactful to me then. Of course, I still went on to learn how to write prescriptions for every symptom and didn't learn how to get to the root of a problem till years later. But yeah, very little nutrition. Most doctors don't have a clue about nutrition, even just how to counsel someone on weight loss. You know, I used to draw this paper plate picture on a piece of paper and tell people to control their portion size, you know, eat less, burn it, and go exercise more, which now, you know, that's totally debunked, and we know that. The science shows that.
Right.
It's all about eating the right kind of fuel. But anyways, very little nutrition in medical school.
Okay. Now, yeah, thanks for sharing that, because I was curious. You know, that is the story that I've gotten across the board with every medical doctor that I've ever interviewed, is that we've got very little, if any, nutritional training. I think it's ironic, too, that as you went to this, as those that went to the elective for nutrition, it was over lunch and they were eating pizza.
Yeah.
I find that ironic.
Yeah, it
is. it's interesting. But so the cardiologist was reversing cardiovascular disease with food. It's interesting. So look at it from this perspective. So we have medical doctors that are well-meaning individuals that get into this profession that want to help people. And they want to help people to keep their body healthy. And they want to help people to live long lives. But throughout medical school, they're not trained about how the fuel that they put into their body affects their body's performance.
Right.
I mean, that's just the reality, is they're just not taught that. One hour in 4 years.
Yeah.
Just not a lot of education.
And
can you imagine if a mechanic went through mechanic school and they never taught them about the way that the fuel runs through the engine of the car, and the importance of putting proper fuel into the car, and the importance of changing the fluids and so forth? I mean, that's really the equivalent of what we have with this generation, these multiple generations of medical doctors that are not really being educated about the importance of nutrition.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's such common sense, it sounds like, you know, too simple to possibly work. And that's what I tell all my patients who come in with various symptoms of whatever disease. You know, your doctors who are treating you symptomatically with pharmaceuticals, it's too hard for them to imagine after 4 years of med school and then 3 or 4 years of residency that if there was something nutritionally that could help you, they would have taught me that in school, is the thought process.
Yeah.
I went to school to learn how to help you. They taught me a bunch of stuff, and surely they taught me everything that could be beneficial for you. So we automatically throw nutrition and other natural therapies into this trash can and say, no, those can't work, because if they did work, I would have learned that in school. That's the big hurdle that doctors have to overcome, but not many of them want to until they're sick themselves. That's the interesting thing. Until these doctors get sick themselves and symptomatic treatments don't work and they get sicker and sicker and sicker, and then they're open to do something else outside the box. So,
You know, Ben, you're right. That is not only a question that doctors have. That's probably the most frequently asked question that I get from patients, wondering why their doctor doesn't know.
Right.
You know, if these treatments work, why has my doctor not told me these things?
Yeah.
It's really the same issue, right? The doctors don't understand, if these work, why wasn't I taught this in medical school?
Right.
Patients don't understand, if these work, why don't doctors teach me about this when I'm in their office?
Yep.
And the reality is, it all goes back to the same issue over 100 years ago, when basically we covered this in the first episode of A Global Quest that we released last year, that in 1910, it was due to a synergy between big business and the American Medical Association. They formed a business alliance. They basically overtook and co-opted the educational model with medical schools in the United States to where now they teach drug-intensive medicine. This was a concerted effort by oil tycoons and chemical tycoons to take over the market and to use to use doctors as their dispensing agents for chemical drugs. And that's what happened with the Flexner Report of 1910. I don't want to go into a lot of detail about it, but if you go to YouTube and you can look for The Truth About Cancer, A Global Quest, Episode 1, it's available for free. You can watch it. The first 20 minutes, we deal with exactly why your doctor doesn't know And it's because they're not educated on these things in medical school, because the curriculum was co-opted with the Flexion Report of 1910. And so even though doctors are brilliant people, and I applaud you, Ben. I don't know how you made it through the medical school to become a medical doctor. I'm not that smart. I don't think I could have done it. It takes a very intelligent person, takes a lot of dedication, takes a really smart person to do this. But even a genius is not able to teach you something that they themselves don't know.
Exactly.
And so doctors are not being educated on this in the medical schools, because the medical school curriculum was co-opted, and medical schools are... I mean, look at the ties between pharmaceutical companies and medical schools, medical doctors, as they're going through their internship and their residency, the way that they're courted. There's just a long line of reasons, and they all deal with money, why doctors are not being educated on these natural treatments.
Yeah, there's definitely a conflict of interest, no doubt about it. That's what I'm learning more and more every day, and the further I get down this road, as you see patients get well from things that in medical school they taught us were incurable, not supposed to get well. Before we go to the next question, I want to just tell our listeners they can text a question in if they need to. 806-745-5800 is the text line.
Real quick, Ben, let me bring up something, because maybe this seems too hard for people to believe. Maybe this seems almost conspiratorial. Let me refer people to the Fitzgerald Report of 1953. The Fitzgerald Report of 1953, that Bennett Fitzgerald was an investigator for the Interstate Commerce Committee that was convened by Congress to determine whether there was a conspiracy to suppress natural cancer treatments in the United States at that time. Now, this was 1953. And after studying the way that the American Medical Association and other entities had a suppressive effect on the flow of goods, specifically treatments like Laetril, between interstate commerce, right, between the states, that he determined that there was an active conspiracy of the American Medical Association and other medical entities to suppress natural cancer treatments in the United States. This is published in the appendix to the Congressional Record of 1953. So if it sounds conspiratorial, well, maybe it sounds that way, but we had a United States Senate Investigatory Committee that concluded that exact thing in 1953, that there was an active conspiracy due to monetary reasons to suppress natural treatments for cancer in the United States.
Wow. Well, you know what? Really, thank you for sharing that, because it is hard for people to believe. It was hard for me to believe. When that patient first handed me Dr. Lorraine Day's DVD, I mean, that definitely got me curious, but then I thought, well, that was just kind of a freak deal, you know, one in a gazillion chance. You know, there could be this spontaneous remission. But the further you dive into this, the more you see. But it's these personal testimonies. That's what got me at the Cancer Control Society. It's Dr. Nick Gonzalez gets up there and goes through these cases. And I loved how he used to say, you know, I'm a geek and I search the medical records and I spend my free time looking through PubMed and all the published data. And I haven't found any published studies of a stage 4 colon cancer with mets to the liver, mets to the brain, mets to the bone. Status mm-hmm. post every therapy, and they're alive 20 years later. And he would go through case by case by case, and it's the personal testimonies of these patients that really get you curious. And then on the flip side, when you realize what's the alternative, I mean, if you're stage 4, stage 3, you're not going to survive, basically. There's like a 1% or 2% odd. So what were some of the personal testimonies that first opened your eyes, but then also as you've done the quest for the cures around the country, but then globally too, were there some personal testimonies that really stood out to you?
Yeah, there were, and that's a great topic to address. And, you know, by the way, Dr. Nick, you know, God rest his soul, he died last summer. And it was really an honor for me to be able to interview Dr. Gonzalez for the first documentary. He was a big supporter of what we did. And the stories that he was able to share are just amazing. The guy was really a geek of all geeks. And he was such a scientist, such an intelligent guy. I remember going up to his office in New York City to interview him for our first documentary. And I basically just asked one question, and he talked for an hour. It literally, I don't know that he took a breath.
Yeah.
It just rolled on and on and on and on. And we're not talking about anecdotal stuff. We're talking about deep scientific studies. He literally did. He told me that Fridays were his day to dive into the medical literature, and he literally just read medical articles and journals all day. That was his fun time, reading medical journals, articles, and reading the literature. So he was really he was just a brilliant man, and the stories that he had, the testimonials that he had of people, you know, he had a lady that he shared with me, her name is Arlene, I think her last name Van Stratton. This is public knowledge, so I can mention her name. But she was, at that time, pancreatic cancer patient that I believe had been diagnosed in 1984. And she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer stage 4. Now, we both know that that's a death sentence in with conventional treatment.
Yeah, I would tell my patients 6 months max, you know, 12 months if you're really lucky. But, yeah, get your affairs in order.
Yeah, and that's across the board. There really is not a treatment for, you know, stage 4 pancreatic cancer that's gonna keep you alive for more than a year. So that was 1984. You know, I interviewed him. No, I'm sorry, that was 1982. I interviewed him in 2014 at that time, so that she had been, she was alive 32 years from diagnosis. Now it's 2016, so she's still alive 34 years.
Wow.
Pancreatic cancer stage 4. Okay. That was one of his stories that just blew me away. But, you know, the first story that I was brought to the attention of back in the 1990s when Dad got sick is I learned about a man named Jason Vail. And Jason was diagnosed at the age of 18 with allegedly terminal cancer and went through several rounds of chemotherapy. It didn't work too well, made him sick, started losing his hair, felt really weak, felt like he was going to die, and it just wasn't working. And at that time, he started reading the literature and found out about apricot seeds and apple seeds that contain laetrile, vitamin B17, one of many natural substances that have an effect on the body that allow it to kill the cancer cells. So he started eating massive amounts of apple seeds and apricot seeds, and voila, his cancer went away. And he started to talking about it. And I saw a videotape of him during the mid 1990s. Videotapes. My kids say, "What's a videotape?" You know, so was, they're like, "I would never heard of that. What's a record? What's a videotape?" But I got a videotape of him. It was on the TV show called Extra, and we watched it, and we're just blown away that he had cured his cancer allegedly with these natural substances. So Jason goes out and, you know, being the altruistic guy that he is and also being an entrepreneur, he thought, well, you know what, I can help people while making some money. I can sell these apple seeds and apricot seeds that are not too widely available, help people treat their cancer, and, you know, start a business. So he did. And I mean, he wasn't making a lot of money. I mean, he's selling these things for dirt cheap, you know, a bag of apricot seeds for $10 or whatever. But he was getting testimonials left and right from people that were using the apricot seeds that were diagnosed with late stage cancer that were alive to tell their story, you know, years and years later. And this happened, this went on for 3 or 4 years until 2001, 2002, at which time he had literally over 1,000 testimonials on his website of people that had taken the apricot seeds and turned their cancer around. Wow. Well, FDA and the FTC didn't like that too much. We know about these alphabet agencies that are kind of the leg breakers for the medical mafia. They go in and they silence people that are starting to make too much noise about natural treatments. Well, long story short, I don't want to take up too much time, but Jason ended up going to jail in 2003, basically for selling apricot seeds on his website. He did 5 years in federal penitentiary in New York for selling apricot seeds. Unbelievable to me. You know, you can rape and murder someone and do less time than that in the United States now, but you sell apricot seeds and you compete with the pharmaceutical industry's monopoly over these cancer treatments and you're going to go to jail. So that was really my first, that was me diving into this suppression of information that is so widely, it's so pervasive today, that that people really have no idea that the powers that be are literally, they're causing the deaths of countless millions of people across the globe because they are not having access to treatments or information about treatments that could potentially save their life. Now, I'm not saying that Laetrile or vitamin B17 is a miracle cure. It's one of many natural substances that could have an effect on people's cancer, and we're just not told about it. As a matter of fact, people that do talk about it, like Jason, go to jail. That was the first of many people that I've interviewed. And I interviewed Jason in 2014 for the first documentary for the Quest for the Cures.
Tyre, you're saying B17 or D17? I'm sorry, B. B is in boy.
B.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
And you know, here's what's interesting about vitamin B17, the way it works, and this is just one, like I said, one of many natural treatments for cancer. So, if you go out and you do a web search for Laetrile or vitamin B17 or amygdalin, there's a lot of different names for it. The first articles that are going to come up are articles that warn you about taking it because you'll die of cyanide poisoning if you take it. Well, the reality is that there's a lot of different natural substances that have a molecule of cyanide in them that are completely inert unless that cyanide's unlocked. Now, Dr. Ben, you know that vitamin B12 also has the molecule of cyanide in it, right? Cyanocobalamin.
Right.
Well, nobody's warning us about taking vitamin B12 that we might die of cyanide poisoning, are they?
No.
Well, because the reality is that it's an inert substance unless it's unlocked. It's the same way for vitamin B17. It's an inert molecule of cyanide unless it's unlocked. And the beauty of it is the way that God's made our bodies is that if we look at Laetrile, we've got one molecule of vitamin in the vitamin B17. We've got a molecule of cyanide, molecule of benzaldehyde, which is also a poison, and we've got two molecules of glucose or sugar. They are inert unless they're unlocked. And the only place in our body that unlocks that molecule is the cancer cell that has an enzyme called beta-glucosidase that unlocks those poisons and makes them really potent to kill that cancer cell. And then we have another enzyme that's pervasive throughout the rest of our body but not at cancer cells, and it's called rhodanase. And rhodanase takes that poison that we've just unlocked and it turns it into a natural painkiller for the rest of our body. So it's just an amazing way that God has made this vitamin B17 in our bodies to work together to where it's a selectively toxic poison against cancer cells, doesn't harm normal cells. Again, just one of many different substances that have similar effects. But I do want to share a story with you, Dr. Ben, because you asked about something that kind of caught my attention as I traveled the globe. There was, when I went to Riga, Latvia last year, I learned about a treatment called Rigvir. That's short for Riga, which is the capital city in Latvia, and virus, Rigvir, Riga virus. And it's a healthy virus that's found in the intestines of healthy children that has selective toxicity to cancer cells.
Wow.
Now, when I went to Riga, Latvia with my camera crew to interview these doctors, I was a little bit apprehensive because I didn't know a lot about Latvia. And to me, it's west of Russia, across the Baltic Sea from Sweden, and it's what we think of as kind of like an Eastern Bloc nation. And so I was afraid maybe we'd get captured there, put into a concentration camp. I didn't know what to expect. But the reality is that Latvia is a very progressive country, very clean city of Riga, a million people, very, very welcoming people, very healthy people. Almost all of the food that's served throughout the city of a million people is farm to table. They grow their own food.
Wow.
They don't allow genetically modified organisms in their country. They don't spray their crops with pesticides or herbicides. Everyone's healthy. There's no obesity. It literally was an amazing visit to me because it was one of the healthiest cities that I'd ever been to, and I did not expect that in Latvia.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But the treatment that we learned about, this Rigvir treatment, this healthy virus, very effective at treating cancer cells. As a matter of fact, the country of Latvia and also Georgia and Armenia have approved Rigvir to be used in traditional oncological wards to treat cancer. And while I was there, I interviewed a lady named Zoya. She was a cancer patient that about 5 years before I interviewed her I interviewed her last year in 2015. So in 2010, she was diagnosed in the hospital in St. Petersburg, Russia, with stage 4 cancer. I can't remember what type of cancer or where it had spread to. I mean, it was all over her body, but I don't remember the primary cancer. I believe that it was stage 4 colon cancer, but I can't be sure. I don't remember. But she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She was gone through, you know, multiple rounds of chemotherapy, and eventually they told Zoya that there was nothing that they could do, that the cancer was going to kill her, that she needed to go home and get her affairs in order, that she would be dead within 2 weeks. So they basically sent her home to the equivalent of Russian hospice in St. Petersburg, Russia, and told her that she'd be dead in 2 weeks. She couldn't get out of bed. She couldn't walk. Her family literally carried her to the car, drove her 4 to 5 hours into Latvia to Riga to try this experimental Rigvir treatment. They took her blood. The pathologist sent the blood back and said that you drew blood from a dead person. I need the blood from the live person. And they said, no, that's her blood. That just shows you what bad shape she was in, that her blood appeared to be the blood of a dead person. There was nothing left. There was no life left in her blood.
Wow.
Within a month, she was walking. And 5 years later, in 2015, I interviewed her. There's no sign of cancer in her body. She's completely healthy. She had gone back after the first few treatments, and she had made such remarkable recovery that she went back to St. Petersburg to tell the patients that she was in the hospital with about this amazing treatment. Unfortunately, they were all dead. She told her oncologist about it, and the oncologist, get this, Ben, tell me if you know oncologists or if you know doctors that might say something like this. The oncologist said that it wasn't the Rigvir that healed her, that it was a delayed reaction from the chemotherapy that he had given her.
Yeah. That sounds like an answer we'd give. I mean, because we don't have a place in our mind, in our conventional Western-trained doctor mind, to put this. Yeah. You know, we just can't comprehend that there are these other things. But that we're, I think, reaching a tipping point now through, and thanks in large part to you and the quest for the cures and the global quest for the cures and your website and the books. I mean, these conferences, you had an amazing conference I didn't get to go to, but my one of my physician assistants, Debbie Hernandez, attended in Grapevine at the Gaylord.
Oh, awesome.
It was, you know, it's this tide-turning, momentum-turning wealth of information and testimonials and science. You know, Tony Jimenez, an amazing doctor, he uses a Rigvir, and he's in Mexico. HopeForCancer.com is his website, the number 4, Hope
yep.
for Cancer. But they're using all these different techniques, and they're publishing. I mean, we're getting to this point now that I think it's hopefully a point of no return where we can see a shift in our way of thinking about cancer, even if it's
yep.
these little steps here in America with immunotherapy, stimulating your own immune system to do what it's supposed to be doing. But, you know, I have patients that will go on to oasisofhope.com. That's another clinic in Mexico. And right there on their front page are their survival rates compared to the United States or the National Cancer Institute statistics, whether it be stage 4 breast cancer, stage 4 lung cancer, stage 4 ovarian cancer, stage 4 colorectal. You just go right down and just look at their survival rates, 1 year, 2 year, 5 year survival rates compared to your conventional therapy. So it's becoming, we can't just put our head in the sand anymore as conventional American doctors and say, oh, no, that's just all hocus pocus. I mean, there are too many testimonials, too many statistics, too much published data internationally, and we're just reaching this tipping point where hopefully we'll go all the way to the finish line with this, where people can have a choice or they can integrate these therapies. And, you know, Dr. James Forsyth, I think you interviewed on your first quest, mm-hmm. where he's an integrative yeah. oncologist and specializes in breast cancer, and his survival rates compared to the conventional, but he blends some therapies. And that's what every oncologist needs to do. When people call me at yeah. our clinic, I say, you need to find an integrative oncologist, even if that's internationally, because they will integrate mm-hmm. all the best therapies that will give you the best chance at survival.
Yep.
So,
That's a good point.
Can you tell me, research-wise, I know a lot of you make contributions as part of your mission with Quest for the Cures. The proceeds from a lot of those sales of the DVDs and the documentaries you put towards organizations that are doing cancer research. Are there any here in America that people could donate to, or is it more private? Some of this may be controversial. What I'm trying to get at is there hope that there's someone out there doing some legitimate, big research that may push this ball even more forward in regards to cancer research that is not pharmaceutical funded?
Yeah. There are several charities that we donate to. One of the ones that does research is called the International Cancer Research Foundation, the ICRF. They do real research. That was initially founded by Webster Kerr, who started the cancertutor.com website. Most people are probably familiar with cancertutor.com if you've studied any natural cancer treatments. But we donate to them. We donate to other groups that have, like Healing Strong, which is another nonprofit that they have small cancer support groups in major cities across the United States for people that they're diagnosed. It's kind of almost like, I guess maybe a crude analogy would be like Alcoholics Anonymous, mm-hmm. you know, where people have local support where they can actually go physically sit and get support from people, learn about what they're doing. They have curricula that they pass out based on a lot of our research, that they'll educate people on their different treatment protocols that are available to them, and they'll also have a network of doctors that they refer people to. We also donate to a charity out of North Carolina called Cancer Crackdown, and that's a charity that specifically helps fund cancer patients that are destitute, that don't have money for natural treatments. They'll actually pay for them and walk through the treatment with them and coach them as they're going through treatment. We're also going to donate this year to the Institute for Responsible Technology, which is Jeffrey Smith's his charity that is into GMO awareness. Because
yeah.
I believe this will be the first time that we've donated to them. But you know, the GMOs are a huge thing because we know that GMOs have been causing cancer in lab rats. And I believe that GMOs are one of our biggest threats. maybe even an invisible threat that people aren't aware of, but it's the biggest, one of the biggest threats regarding cancer that we know of today, and it's because GMOs are so pervasive throughout our food supply. So that's another one that we donate to, but there, and that's four of, you know, literally dozens of other charities that are really doing cancer research and trying to think outside the box. And one of the things that you said, Ben, that I agree completely with is we should be looking, oncologists should be looking to use a treatment protocol, an integrated protocol, whatever kind of a protocol you want to call it, that just gets the best outcome for the patient.
Right.
That's it. It should, yeah. You know, physicians shouldn't be hamstrung and say, you can't use this treatment, you can't use this one, you can't use this one. Their only goal should be, let's get the cancer patient better. However that looks, it doesn't matter. Let's get them better. And that's really our goal with the Truth About Cancer, is just to continue to have the freedom, or to allow oncologists the freedom to where they can treat cancer patients the best they know how and get them better. That's all that really matters.
Yeah, amen, brother. Exactly. Amen. Well, I'd encourage everybody to go to thetruthaboutcancer.com and learn more about everything we're talking about today. But I really encourage you to look at the Ultimate Live Symposium. You can purchase those recordings to have on your computer, or have a hard copy, a DVD copy. That was the latest symposium that Ty put on at the Gaylord a few weeks ago, and it was amazing. 40 or 50 different doctors from around the world, some of the leading experts on cancer therapies. I'm still combing through them. I bought it for myself, and I'm listening to them, and it's just great information, very encouraging. You know, the really, you don't want to wait until you get diagnosed with cancer. And like Ty said at the beginning of the show, that's 50% of the population, roughly, you're going to have cancer. So don't wait until you get the dreaded diagnosis, and then you're told, oh, you got to rush into surgery or chemo tomorrow, because that seems to always be the case. You got to rush right in and start your therapies right away. Get educated now, and get educated on behalf of your loved ones. And this is, I think, one of the best ways to do it, the Ultimate Life Symposium. And I know everyone's wondering, well, you know, tell me the cure. What's the cure? Well, and you kind of already touched on it. There's not a cure. Your body has the cure. God designed our body to heal itself. We tell every patient that walks in our door, not even, you know, regardless of their diagnosis, whether it be diabetes or hypertension or ulcerative colitis or eczema or psoriasis or whatever. You know, those are all symptoms and labels. The body knows how to fix itself if you give it what it needs and avoid what it doesn't. So I would say in a nutshell, and you can correct me, Ty, to how you would say it, but that basically that's across the board, every quote-unquote disease, including cancer. Give the body what it needs, avoid what it doesn't. What the body needs is nutrients, and they need fresh, clean nutrients like God made, not altered by man. So eat lots of color and eat lots of clean God food is what I call it, food that was before man altered it. And so that's mostly what we need. Of course, we need sunshine and exercise. We oxygenate. We get our vitamin D that way. But these are very basic things. And we need to be at peace. We need to not be stressed out all the time. Stress drives cortisol. One of the things on the Ultimate Live Symposium recordings that you'll hear throughout the recordings and all the presentations is emotional healing, spiritual healing. If someone, you know, has believed a lie somewhere deep in there, you know, and there's unforgiveness or rejection or bitterness or whatever from when you were, you know, just in your prior life or earlier in your life, you know, those things hang on, and those things cause dysfunction at the cellular level. And these doctors who have been treating cancer for a number of years all pointed to that you've got to be at peace. So give the body what it needs, avoid what it doesn't. And what it doesn't is all these toxins. That's the biggest thing you'll hear over and over and over. Toxins, 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 sugar, sugar, sugar. So it's real basic stuff. And everyone's unique and individual. There's not just protocol ABC, do these 1, 2, 3 things and you're cured. Everyone's unique. Every situation's unique. Every stage 4 colon cancer is a little bit different, but based on your personal history and your emotional traumas and all this stuff. So it's a comprehensive thing, but yet it's the basic stuff. I'd boil it down to the 4 pillars: nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace. God designed us to have those 4 things to produce health, and it'll produce these you know, you'll go into remission or become symptom free of these various diseases. So your worldly travels, Ty, in a nutshell, in a sentence or two, if you can do it, would you concur with that, or what would you add to that for the quote unquote cure?
Yeah, no, I agree, Ben. That's a good synopsis. So what I try to tell people is, if you think of cancer, and actually many diseases, are a combination of toxicity with a deficiency. Our bodies are toxic. We've got too much. We got heavy metals. We got pesticides. We got GMOs in them. that have caused an immune system to become compromised and not work as well. So we're toxicity coupled with deficiency in nutrition. So if we get rid of the toxins and we get rid of that nutritional deficiency and begin to fuel our body, the body does the healing. So I think that's a great synopsis. And just so people know, the Ultimate Live Symposium that we had last month in Dallas, we are going to replay that this weekend over Black Friday to what they call it, Cyber Monday, Black Friday to Cyber Monday.
Awesome.
After Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So that's going to be online for free. Just go to thetruthaboutcancer.com to sign up and get a chance to watch the whole conference for free over the weekend.
Well, thank you, Ty. You've helped a number of my patients. It's a great resource to point people to learn more about these various ways to keep your body healthy. So thank you for all you're doing, brother.
You bet. Thank you, Dr. Ben. I appreciate the invitation today. It's been awesome. We'll have to do it again.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ty. Appreciate that
right.
call, buddy.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Good call. Good talk. Wish we'd had the lines all lined up at first, but I think it all worked out.
Well, thanks for saving the day and getting us on, Jim.
Well, we got it on. Never mind. I won't go into what kind of college. If that's neither here nor there. We got you on. It's always good to have Dr. Ben Edwards with us. And I think last time I was with you was the Monday before the big day, the big election. So
right, yeah.
You have a smile on your face today. So does that mean anything?
Well, no, it's Monday, Jim. I try to start my week with a smile all the
smile
time.
Smile every day, matter of fact.
Not talking about politics brings a smile to my face.
That's all I was going to, because I don't talk politics that well anyway. That's not my forte. But
well,
I was just thinking this morning coming in, that's the last time I'd seen you since.
Yeah, it has been. But thank you for letting me come on today. We've interviewed a few different guests the last few weeks.
Good.
And
that was
it's all talk. About bringing information and knowledge to the table so these patients and these people, these listeners, can be informed. You know, informed consent is a big thing. I now see that in my first 10 years of being a doctor, I wasn't giving true informed consent because I didn't know all this stuff. And most
That's
doctors out there don't know. So education, informed consent. I'm informing you of all the facts so that you can make a wise decision for you, you as a person, for your body, for your health. And some people choosing, the chemosurgery radiation only option is the right choice for them. And all we're saying today is let's look at all the choices, let's inform people of everything that's out there, and the patient can make an informed consent.
Are younger doctors getting that nowadays when they go through that, or is it still about the same?
No, I just talked to one who graduated from her residency program in Fort Worth. She's 6 months into her doctoring now as a private doc, and she emailed me to say she's ready to throw in the towel. 6 months into her profession, she's going to throw in the towel because she is so sick and tired of cookbook medicine, run them through like cattle medicine, throw a drug at every symptom, you're never fixing anybody. Everybody's always coming back for more drugs, and she's ready to be done. But then she's found our website and saw that we see 5 patients a day, and we help people get to the root of the problem, and they become symptom-free. So she wants to do what we do. So young doctors aren't being taught that there is this other option. But I think, like I said, the tide's starting to turn. You can't deny the testimonials and the results that are out there. So
well, to sound like big medicine, we, I always hear of a dietary doctor or practitioner or dietary services there. You can go and get information for what you need
right.
at the hospitals after that. They don't tell you, but they don't go into what you just said.
Yeah.
We have time, I think, for one more phone call. Let's check it out and see if we can get this call. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. I'm encouraging everybody to listen to your show, especially those in West Texas. It sounds like a great West Texas idea. And those that have just now started doctor school and stuff, what they don't know might be the best, but what they learn from you might be another best.
Yep.
Right.
We appreciate that.
That way they don't have to step through what they don't know that might not be the best.
Well,
and what if they find something with you to be better than the best?
Right. Well, I have students contact me.
Appreciate that call.
Who will say that, I want to learn what you learned, but what about med school? I tell them, go to med school. You need to learn it all. You need to learn how to treat symptoms because some patients need that or want that. But then once you get out, then you come train with us, and we'll teach you how to the other options that are out there to get to the root of the problem.
Fantastic. Dr. Ben Edwards, everybody, integrative holistic medicine family practitioner. 1-855-855-6-VERITAS. That's VERITAS. Great young gentleman. Always a pleasure sitting here with you, Dr. Edwards, and I'm glad we got us all straightened out finally this morning. But what a great interview with Ty. That was very informative.
Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate you letting us talk today.
Well, it's always fun.